KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, we discuss effects in both the short as well as long term in Silicon Valley of the present financial crisis. There is no bailout for Silicon Valley, yet there are certainly ongoing concerns that the industries and economies there will need assistance as Wall Street problems continue to have their impact on the American economy. We'll have a panel and we'll take your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The main drivers of growth in Silicon Valley are startup companies and the venture capital sources of their funding. With layoffs looming in the valley and tech stocks losing value, we want to take stock in this hour of the overall effects of the credit crisis here in Northern California backyard, Silicon Valley. And we're going to look at the short term as well as the long term with a number of experts who we have assembled for the hour. And let me tell you who they are. We want to welcome Sarah Lacey, who is joining us by phone this morning, columnist with Business Week and co-host of Yahoo Finance's Tech Ticker, also author of Once You're Lucky, Twice You're Good, The Rebirth of Silicon Valley and the Rise of Web 2.0. Good morning, Sarah Lacey.
Thanks for having me back.
Glad to have you back. Also glad to have Carl Guardino, who is president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Good morning, Carl Guardino.
Delighted to join you, Michael.
Glad to have you here. And we also welcome Jan Yadigaroglu, who is co-founder and managing officer of Capricorn Investment Group. He's with us this morning from New York City, and good morning to you.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you. And here in studio is David Sifri, who is founder and chairman of Technorati, a leading blog search engine. His fifth and latest startup is Offbeat Guides, and welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
Glad to have you all aboard here. Well, as is a custom, let's go to the journalists first here. Sarah Lacey, often the custom, I should say. The startups are getting hit pretty hard in this, but even the venture capitalists that funded them, as I was reading you saying, are also, pretty concerned. Is there panic out there? Do you smell panic out there?
I don't think there's panic so much. I think there's a sense, though, that it's like the other shoe has finally dropped in the valley. I think for most of this year, there's been an unsettling feeling in Silicon Valley because, frankly, we didn't cause the crisis this time. And there's a sense of, you know, it wasn't totally clear how it was going to hit the valley. And most of the ramifications are just the normal things that you would see in a prolonged economic turndown. Startups are definitely going to get hit. Purse strings are really, really starting to tighten up. And startups that don't have enough money to last them through a year really need to watch their burn rate, raise what they can, find whatever revenues, you know, whatever kind of line of revenues they can. But all of that sort of happens in every downturn and really happens every couple years. I mean, the startup ecosystem is a risky business. It's supposed to be a risky business. So anyone going into it should expect that these things go in cycles. To me, the real difference this time around is what's going to happen with venture capital, because venture capital was the only part of the Silicon Valley ecosystem that didn't really get hit in the last downturn. More and more money poured into the asset class because it's perceived to be a long-term investment, and the 10-year numbers were good. Now, with the credit crisis really hurting the markets, really wrecking Wall Street, it looks like the rest of 2008 and 2009 are going to be bad years for exits, and that's bad news for venture capitalists because pretty soon those 10-year indexes aren't going to include 99 and 2000 anymore, and we've only had about two decent years of exits for venture capital in the last eight. So that's the real concern, and that's where I think this downturn is going to be very different for the
Valley. The venture capitalists managed to stand up fine after the bubble burst, but you're saying now things are more shaky and fragile. And I was reading a prediction that you were writing about and that you seem to put some stock in, a web entrepreneur that you were talking about, saying as many as 80% of emerging businesses will go under in the next 18 months. I know you don't believe it's that high, but this sounds pretty serious to me.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing to remember is most people think something like 90% of companies that were started in 99 and 2000 failed, even looking back, even after we lived through it. And actually, there was a study done by University of Maryland a couple years ago that showed it was only 45%. I mean, the Valley's actually pretty resilient. A lot of companies will retrench. There are a lot of people who've made money in prior incarnations of, you know, of their career here. And they'll retrench and keep things going and lick their wounds and, you know, maybe come back out stronger. We certainly saw that in the 2000s with Zappos, an e-commerce company that was funded at the worst possible time and everyone thought would completely fail. But, you know, it hunkered down, did something very different, focused on customer service, and it's one of the strongest emerging e-commerce companies now. It's still private, but going to do $1 billion in revenues. So companies can ride out the storm. I think the good thing is it separates the wheat from the chaff. It separates not only the good ideas from the bad ideas, but the entrepreneurs who are true entrepreneurs and aren't just jumping on a bandwagon.
Talking with Sarah Lacy, columnist for Business Week. Ultimately, in the long term, you're pretty optimistic. In fact, predicting optimism down the line?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the biggest initial hit we're going to get is from the public companies in the Valley, because in order to appease Wall Street, they're going to have to do layoffs. They're going to have to do cutbacks. Certainly, a lot of people in the Valley have their net worth tied up in companies like Yahoo and Google. So that'll be the first big thing that hits us economically. But, you know, we'll move on from that. The companies will come back. They'll start investing at some point in the future.
In fact, speaking of big things, there's going to be a need to find the next big thing, I guess, isn't there?
Yeah. And it's, you know, innovation will always come back. I mean, there will be entrepreneurs who get run out of business and, you know, startups that fail. And I don't want to make light of that. But, you know, the startup ecosystem is bigger than any one person in the Valley. And innovation actually usually gets jump-started in these periods. I mean, companies that we're all excited about right now, like LinkedIn and Facebook and MySpace and YouTube, these guys all got started before there was any Web 2.0 wave. So even though we're in for a rough couple years, after that, we're in for a great couple years. I mean, that's the Valley cycle.
Well, Carl Guardino, there are those who are opining that this is really going to hurt innovation. It's going to impede it.
I think just the opposite. We are, in good times, realistic optimists in Silicon Valley. In tough times, we're steely-eyed optimists. But this financial crisis, and it truly is a deep crisis, is not an innovation or creativity crisis. And we still see companies innovating and creating here every day in really remarkable ways. And when we talk about the next wave of innovation, as you just mentioned to Sarah, we still see a lot of venture capital investment, about $2.6 billion in the last year in clean and green tech. And that's a wave of innovation that's not only helping to drive Silicon Valley's future success, but that's for products and processes that are helping to save our planet as well. So are we realistic about what's happening? Absolutely. Is anyone standing on a ledge? No, I don't see that at all. We're going to ride this storm. It's not a storm we created, and it's not a storm ultimately that's going to hurt innovation.
Well, we're going to talk, in fact, with Jan Yarigaragoglu about some of this green innovation. But I want to just get a general picture from you, Carl Guardino. And again, Carl Guardino is president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Because there is a credit crisis and it's dampening mergers and acquisitions. And the fact is customers are unable to pay and smaller companies are having problems meeting payrolls. And moreover, not to sound alarms here or like I'm going through a laundry list of things, but on the one hand, Silicon Valley was more immune because it does so much exporting to the global markets, but now the global markets are being affected too. So the overall picture, certainly in the short term, is not great.
That's true, but we're in it for the long term and we'll survive the short term, and that's the good news. I agree with what you have mentioned as the challenges. We have 285 CEOs. Our organization represents one of every three private sector jobs in Silicon Valley, and over the past few weeks, I've spoken with at least a few dozen of those CEOs about the credit crisis. What I'm hearing is, one, as you said, a tougher time for mergers and acquisitions as they try to finance closing those deals. That's a real challenge, especially about keeping those jobs here. The second one is tech companies, especially large tech companies, tend to have large cash reserves. The problem is their customers, especially customers smaller than about $500 million in annual revenue, often don't have the cash reserves to buy their product. And at some point, will that impact jobs here? Perhaps. unfortunately, we're not seeing that yet. And hopefully, with the federal government finally acting, not as quickly as we would have liked, but finally acting, and the international community trying to act more in concert, hopefully that will be avoided in any large-scale way as well.
Well, it's not, as far as jobs, it's not going to be like the dot-com bust. About 17% of jobs disappeared then.
That was painful. The dot-com bust, and that was focused here. We were the center of the storm. 212,000 jobs evaporated in Silicon Valley, 17 of every 100 jobs. But that was because that was our crisis. This is not. We are feeling the ripple effect of the financial crisis. We don't take it lightly. But this is not a creativity or innovation crisis, and we're going to weather this storm. And as Sarah said, we're going to come out stronger.
Again, we're talking to Carl Guardino, President and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Is there a tighter hold on money by venture capitalists now? And does there also offer a kind of greater opportunity for venture capitalists in light of all this?
And I'm glad you have a venture capitalist on the line. My sense from venture capitalists that are members are that you watch every deal that you are making. But I was just sitting down with a CEO of a company, can't name the firm because I hadn't asked his permission, but an RFID company just closed another $39 million round in the last few days. So people are still getting funding. So I we're hoping that the VC community in no way stops putting their words where their wallets are and betting on innovation in Silicon Valley.
Well, as Carl Guardino said, we do have a venture capitalist with us. That's Jan Yadagaroglu, and he's with us from New York. He's co-founder and managing executive of Capricorn Investment Group. And you're pretty bullish. I mean, one reason I guess you're bullish is because you're doing all this green entrepreneurship, and things look better in the sense of $18.5 billion in tax cuts for solar, wind, and renewables. So there's no bailout for Silicon Valley, but the bailout has some things really good to offer you, don't they?
I think so, but I would say it's much broader than that. If you listen carefully, even in the recent couple of days, a lot of debate is now starting to focus on what is happening. You know, where a lot of things are masked by this incredibly violent liquidation cycle happening in the financial system. But you know, that will almost certainly get under control. I think what the Valley being much more long-term focused and the country being long-term focused, you know, what I think most people are even more concerned about is that we have a traditional, you know, Keynesian kind of cycle, a recession, maybe a depression, and what do we do about it? And we need to stimulate the economy, and we're broke. And I think that, you know, again, with all the focus on the banks, we're losing sight of the fact that it's that there are much, much bigger problems, right? We have the entire bank rescue package has a bill of $700 billion on it. That's what we're spending every year to buy crude oil, every year. And that's really a tax. That's not there's no investment in that. That's just leaving the country. And we've also spent a similar amount on this war in Iraq. I mean, those are huge amounts of money. And the news on the climate change front is extraordinarily distressing. We may have in just 3 to 5 years, we may have no ice in the northern caps. So I think that while of course the Valley, it's impossible to disagree with what Sarah says, while the Valley will certainly feel the impacts of this current crisis, certainly in the short term, I think a lot of us in the Valley see the enormous opportunity and responsibility we have to fix this. And the solution that ties it all together is repowering America, is green jobs. You know, we need to be creating millions of jobs, and those jobs need to be focused on making sure that we buy less foreign oil, and that we put less CO2 in the atmosphere. And it's just it's an extraordinary opportunity. It's a very sort of American kind of opportunity, and a lot of money will be made, and it will stimulate our economy in a big way.
Well, this is essentially what your VC capital firm is involved in, that is green jobs and electric cars, and it's certainly a good investment from your perspective. But what about the overall sense of VC in the Valley? I mean, there's a lot of fallout. It's more difficult to go public. And in fact, some are saying it's killing innovation.
Well, for sure, it becomes harder to do these things when people feel like they have less money. And for sure, right now it's almost impossible to think about anything long term. Everyone's vision, even those that had, you know, 3-5 year outlooks on things, are thinking what's happening next week. In that context, it's very difficult to fix problems and to make new investments. There is certainly investment happening every day, but it's investment that's going towards fixing problems, and it's investment going to companies that already had strong backing and had really already solidified their position. I think it's going to be, for a couple of weeks minimum, it's going to be very hard to go raise money or go, you know, embark on new adventures that are long term, until there's at least some amount of calm that returns to how people are thinking about the economy.
Jan Yadigaraglu, again, is co-founder and managing executive of Capricorn Investment Group. And we're also talking this morning with David Sifri, who's here in studio with us. He's founder and chair of Technorati. It's a leading blog search engine. He's, started up his fifth company, Offbeat Guides. And you're optimistic in the long run.
Yeah, I am. I actually think, though, there's going to be quite a bit of pain before that. We'll certainly see some babies get thrown out with the bathwater, if this is any indication, if it's going to be at all similar to the previous bust. I agree with the previous guest that, you know, for the most part, this isn't going to be nearly as bad as it was in 2000, 2001. But there's a whole bunch more scarier structural problems that are happening this time around that weren't quite the same in, 99 to 2001. And in particular, I think that there's a bunch of areas that have traditionally been very strong for building businesses here in Silicon Valley that are actually going to take a harder hit. One of them is enterprise software companies, and especially people who built software for the financial industry. That industry, unless you are building something that so clearly shows return on your investment, right, and saves a lot of money, or in one case, for example, you know, helps you with your legal bills, you're going to have a very difficult time going forward. And second, I think the advertising-based businesses are also going to show a pretty hard time. And we've already seen a number of analysts coming out in the last couple of days cutting expectations for even some of the largest companies. But I'm actually not that worried about the Googles and the Yahoos of the world, even though I think they're
taking
laying
off
a lot
people,
of hits.
Right?
Yeah, and there will certainly be layoffs. And in fact, so that as a as an entrepreneur and as a startup guy, to be honest, is kind of a help for us, right? And you're going to see a forest fire, you know, clearing out some of that brush and some of the younger, strong companies being able to do well and be able to be heard above the din. What we're going to see is, you know, a lot of what we saw where, you know, what I call the barbell effect, right, where companies that are very large, that have done traditionally very well. I mean, you know, Google's got loads of cash on its balance sheets. You know, Yahoo, even if it's having a difficult time now, also still has a lot of cash. These guys don't need credit per se in order to be able to run the business. And so they're going to be able to do to weather those downturns. You know, Technorati as well, right? We've been building out a strong brand and getting a lot of great revenue coming in. And the other companies that will do very well, I think, are the young startups, the ones that only need a couple $1 million, who have, you know, 10 employees or less, who can batten down the hatches, focus on proving out their technologies, getting customers, you know, really changing, disrupting a current industry, who, by the way, all of those industries are going to be sitting around saying, geez, how do we retrench? So young startups are going to be able to walk in and say, hey, we can save you money. Hey, here's a fantastic new product that's going to revolutionize or disintermediate middlemen. Those companies will actually have an extraordinary opportunity to gain market traction during this time. The folks who I think are going to have the hardest time are the guys in the middle of that barbell, the ones who are relatively larger, have more cash burn, they're not profitable yet, and really haven't yet proved out the model, or in particular around advertising businesses, you know, are going to start to see the freeze up here in the fourth quarter as customers, you know, spend less in the marketplace. Marketers are going to spend less on advertising. These companies are going to get caught with high burn rates and low revenues. And I think we'll end up seeing actually quite a few of them having a real difficult time during the winter.
So it's the middle, just like the middle class gets hurt often the most. It's in the middle. But let's talk about the big guys for a minute, because you say they have so much cash on hand, but there are a lot of layoffs coming, not only probably Yahoo and Google, but also eBay. I mean, many are predicting this, but the shares are at the lowest levels in years.
They are. And I mean, look, I'm not a financial analyst, so I don't want to make any predictions on where the stocks will go. But everybody's been taking a bath. And I think part of this is people panicking at the hedge fund level and at, you know, larger institutional levels, just pulling all of their money out of the market, which is just dropping prices for everyone. And in fact, for me, I'm looking around saying, you know what, there's going to be a bottom here, and there's actually going to be some pretty interesting buying opportunities when the market really starts to crater and sort of sits there. And, you know, for these really strong established companies who are clearly providing a great service, have strong differentiation amongst all of their competitors, they're going to have to, as Sarah said before, show Wall Street they're doing the responsible thing, tighten up operations, maybe be a little bit less speculative, probably do less M&A during this time as they batten down as well. But at the same time, the core business will stay very strong. And I think it's the companies proven over time, the companies who actually invest during these kinds of downturns are the ones who are the strongest when the economy returns.
But you mentioned enterprise companies, I think, and advertising, and one would say generally people who are building, say, web-based 2.0 companies in general. But the semiconductor industry is going to be, and has already hit hard by this, because there's so much financing on credit.
Yeah, they're very, very capital intensive. And I think, and I'm not an expert in the semiconductor industry, so I'll beg off in terms of who are winners and losers here. But certainly, if you're a company that needs an extraordinary amount of capital or access to debt over the next 12 to 18 months, I think this isn't a short-term problem. I think that we're talking about a much more difficult economic situation that's going to go over, you know, the next 12 to 18, perhaps 24 months. You better find out ways that you can do it, you know, either a little bit slower, expand a little bit slower, or, you know, find alternative funding methods to be able to build out with what you got.
Again, David Sifry here in studio is founder and chairman of Technorati, a leading blog search engine, and has done five startups. His latest is Offbeat Guides. I'm open up the phone lines because I know there are many of you who want to weigh in here. And if you have questions or comments, you're certainly cordially invited to do so. We're talking about Silicon Valley and certainly bears on the whole Bay Area economy. Silicon Valley feeling certainly effects of the credit crisis, layoffs looming and tech stocks losing value. And that's the short run, as the whole economy is certainly in a kind of fragile state. But you may want to comment in general about Silicon Valley or bring up a question or raise something of an issue here in terms of our discourse. Our toll-free number is available to you, and it's available to you whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your calls, and you can call us now. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email, and the email address here is simply forum@kqed.org. Sarah Lacey, let me just, before we go to the break, go back to you for a moment. Some are saying it's not a question of if, but when Silicon Valley gets hit in a major way here. We're not talking about bust again like the last time, but we're talking about something that will have certainly a lot of fallout and a lot of reverberating effects.
Yeah, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that there's a difference between the, you know, financial obligation and what seems to make sense on paper and the way people, when this human emotion comes into it, actually invest their money. I mean, as David was saying, there's going to be a lot of buying opportunities, but people don't want to buy when they've just been battered and they've watched, you know, stocks be in free fall. And, you know, by the same token, you see it with venture capitalists. I moved to Silicon Valley and started covering this industry at the peak of the last bubble. So having seen a whole cycle, I hear venture capitalists say all the time, it's a great period for investment. We're still investing. All the things that Carl said. But you got to actually look what they do, because they're human too, and a lot of them, they don't do it.
All right. When we come back, we'll take your calls and emails. Again, we're talking to Sarah Lacey, Business Week, Carl Guardino of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and Jan Yadigaragu of Capricorn, and David Sifry of Technorati. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the effects of the present financial crisis on our own backyard, Silicon Valley. We're broadcasting, of course, from San Francisco, and the effects really have been felt out here. But if you read some of the analysis, not to the extent that are being felt in other parts of the country because of Silicon Valley and because of all the exporting that Silicon Valley does and all the innovation and so forth, but certainly they're getting hit like everybody else. And to what extent in both the short term and the long term is what we're considering here this hour. Here with us in studio is David Siffrey, who's founder and chair of Technorati, a leading blog search engine, and with us by phone, Carl Guardino, president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, and Jan Yadigaraglu, who is co-founder and managing executive of Capricorn Investment Group, and Sarah Lacey, columnist with Business Week and co-host of Yahoo, France's Tech Ticker, also author of Once You're Lucky, Twice You're Good, The Rebirth of Silicon Valley and the Rise of Web 2.0. Let's go to our callers. Sandip, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Speak to us.
Oh, hi. I was going to ask about the general slowdown in the Valley and how you guys feel that would affect outsourcing, particularly growth in software in India and countries that produce software.
Yeah. Carl Guardino.
Sandip, thank you for calling in. As we hear from CEOs about the current financial crisis, the strategies remain twofold. We have global customers, we have global facilities, a global supply chain. So companies are going to continue to grow around the globe. And I don't see this financial challenge impacting placing jobs here as opposed to the ratio of placing jobs around the globe as well.
Let me thank Sandip for the call and move on to more of your calls. Fernando from Cupertino, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about venture capital money. Do you see venture capital money moving away from Silicon Valley and perhaps chasing a new bubble in emerging markets like Brazil?
Jan de Gargle?
Well, I think that's certainly something that has been ongoing where, you know, the rise of consumers in China and India has put a lot of attention on those countries. And also, those are areas where we have the rapid rise of energy consumption. And that's, if you're thinking of sort of the clean technology opportunity, there's been a lot of focus on that. Now, if we want to sort of ask ourselves, what does this crisis do? I don't know I have a good answer yet. I think a lot of us are still, trying to think very, very fast about how these opportunities may have changed. And to go to the prior caller's question on jobs, I do think it might be a bit different on outsourcing because as we're going to fight to keep unemployment low, I think some of those things will probably come down from the political process and will be discouraged. So although I don't see an immediate impact, I do think that the country will be very, very focused on trying to create jobs and retain jobs.
And I think the issue of emerging markets is something that I'm going to be watching very closely. You know, as I mentioned earlier and actually wrote about in my Business Week column today, venture capital really is going to start going through something in the next couple years where, either the industry is going to have to figure out a new way to make venture-style returns that are consummate with the risk investors are going to have to take, or it's going to become much smaller. Some people predict that, in a couple years, once those 10-year returns become much more negative, as much as 25 or 30% of the money could leave venture capital as an asset class. So I think you're going to start seeing, you already have seen, a lot of investors for the first time scrambling and really testing out international markets. And so far, a lot of people feel like they've been throwing money into a black hole in India and China. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. On the one hand,
well, the caller mentioned Brazil, too, we should add. I mean,
Brazil, absolutely. Yeah. And I think another one I'm starting to hear about is Eastern Europe as an area where there's a lot of innovation. More than ever, investors are spending a lot of time in these markets, but they've been at it enough years and not seen returns that it's hard to know how it's going to shake out. And if these are the firms that limited partners come down on in a couple of years and the industry gets smaller and more boutique again, you could see them focusing more on the Valley. It's, really could go either way, but I think the next couple of years we'll see something happen there.
Well, speaking of shaking out, I noticed in one of your articles you were making a prediction that a lot of these superstar VC partners are going to quit and become angels.
Yeah, I actually think that's going to happen. You saw it with Vinod Khosla, who's one of the best known investors, you know, certainly in Silicon Valley history in the wake of the last bust. I think overall we're really seeing a cultural shift towards individualism and working for yourself. It's obviously something we've seen in journalism with bloggers. You're starting to see it with analysts. You're seeing it with consultants. And I think you're even going to see it with venture capitalists. I mean, look, it's a home run business. Something like 5, 10% of the deals make up 90% of the industry returns. If you're in this dysfunctional business where returns are getting dragged down and dragged down, and you're the one who's the rainmaker for your firm, your one deal is making back the whole money for that fund, at a certain point, why wouldn't you leave? You know, I hear from venture capitalists in the Valley all the time that they really miss the boutique roots of this industry when it was just a couple guys making deals, really working with entrepreneurs and not having so much pressure to put so much money to work and, you know, return several times on a $400 or $500 million fund. So I think the guys who are the real rock stars are going to start breaking off. And I think long term, that's healthy for the Valley.
Yeah, when I hear you talk about home runs, why do I associate that with steroids in this day and age? I'm sorry to say. Let me go back to David Siffre, who is here with us in studio, because there certainly a lot of the startups are concerned now in the wake of all of this with more government regulation. When Sarbanes-Oxley was passed, there was Sarah Lacey pointed out in her article, kind of a chill on IPOs.
Oh, absolutely. In some cases, for the better, right? You wanted to make sure that, you know, the returns that and the financial accounting methods that companies were using were real, were accurate, that people weren't playing fast and loose. However, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley has proven to be an extraordinary cost, even for public companies. And so when you're a private company now looking and saying, hey, we're thinking about opening up at the IPO markets, and you're also looking at private equity, by the way, which, as Sarah is saying, is very, you know, has been growing along with the venture capital business into the hundreds of millions of dollars, multi-billion dollars. You have companies like LinkedIn, for example, which raised extraordinary amounts of money in the private equity markets, staying private. Facebook raising extraordinary amounts of money from strategic partners, corporate partners, and private equity funds. In what, quite frankly, in any other market would have been considered IPO-type valuations and IPO-type liquidity events. So I think that Sarbanes-Oxley, while it certainly has helped in many ways to alleviate from the excesses of, you know, the last bust, the last bubble where, you know, widows and orphans were losing their life savings, that it's also definitely spurred a reduction in the returns that venture capitalists have been seeing, and therefore also a reduction in a lot of the investment that's going on. It's overall, I would say, great companies who have great business models are getting funded and they're getting profitable sooner. And I'm not sure that that's a bad thing.
David Siffre, again, is chair and founder of Technorati. And let me go to another caller. That's you, Steve. Hi.
Hi, I'm Steve. I'm a biomedical engineer turned entrepreneur in the Bay Area. And I'm wondering how you think the medical device industry will be hit by this. And secondly, I'm wondering, it seems as though venture capital investment is a more of a long-term investment, and that when VC firms raise funds from large money sources, they're looking for a long-term investment. So do you think that the short-term economic downturn will actually maybe increase these investors' propensity to want to invest in a more long-term investment that isn't hit as hard by the short-term effects of the economy?
All right, you've got two questions there. Actually, let me go to Carl Gordino on the first part of the first question. Medical device industry, Carl, how's it look for you?
The medical device companies that I've heard from, again, share the general concerns. Fortunately, their companies are still strong. What they're doing is still strong, and it's needed in the marketplace. The concern is one of the more general nature. We're not taking it lightly, but it, again, is the more general nature, and that is, can customers at this time when they can't get the funding they need from financial institutions close the deals that they're making? So it, again, is it's the broader issue, and that's why we were glad to see Congress finally act slower than they should have, to be sure, but finally act so that we can slowly start stabilizing this situation.
Jan Yarigaroglu, the second question from that caller had to do with maybe looking more toward the long term in this financial climate? What do you think?
I think that's a great question. I think, you know, of course, in tough times, it will be harder for all companies to raise money, and it will be harder for all companies to be successful. But one thing maybe, you know, the silver lining, if you want to look at it for the Valley, is, you know, we've always made money the hard way by creating new companies and creating real growth. And if you think about it in relative terms, it was becoming difficult to compete with what Wall Street could do with its magic, you know, when it was so easy to create these vast, vast fortunes through hedge funds and through subprime securitizations and all these other things that were being done. I think it was, in a way, you know, making it very hard for venture capital to make a case for itself and for these companies to make cases for themselves that they were good risk returns. So even though I think it will be tough times for everyone, I think in a relative sense, this more straightforward, more real way to create value might actually, in the end, benefit in some ways.
What do you think, David Siffer? You think more looking toward the long term?
Yeah, very much. And in fact, to reflect on what Carl was just saying, there have been venture firms and who in New York who have come out and done startup job fairs in the financial industry. Right? Don't forget, these are some of the best rocket scientists, physicists, you know, mathematicians who have been going into the bowels of Wall Street to be able to create these incredibly hard to understand financial derivatives and been making a lot of money. Well, you know what? Maybe it's time now that some of them are going to say, gee, the opportunity here to actually build a real company that is something that isn't just a financial machination, but instead is providing real value, changing the world, you know, building something on what I was actually trained to do and not just pushing numbers. You know, hey, you know, maybe I want to go out and go back to Silicon Valley or, you know, go to work here in New York and actually build a company that creates real value. I think that there's actually an extraordinary opportunity here in the ashes. And, you know, look, if you're being affected by this right now, it's never going to look good. But I would be looking beyond this and saying, hey, wait a minute, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, this is just another blip that we'll all be looking back on. But at the same time, you know, if you're investing, if you sit down and you say, hey, you know what, how do I tighten my belt? How can I build on that dream that I have to, you know, to change the world for a positive way, build something great? The opportunities are extraordinary.
Let's get more calls on and let's go to Celine. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering how the biotech startups are going to be affected since they need a lot of capital for a long time because their investments are, you know, are so huge over such a long period of time.
Sarah Lacey?
Yeah, biotech to me and medical devices, going back to the previous caller, to a lesser degree but still – they are much more vulnerable in a market like this, and particularly a market where the IPO market is not going to be available. Because in biotech, it's so much more capital consumptive to start a company, develop a drug, take it through clinical trials. You can spend hundreds of millions of dollars before you know if you even have a product that's going to be viable in the market. And in that industry, venture capital does not take those companies all the way to that point. Frequently, you know, it's de rigueur in biotech for a company to go public as its third or fourth funding round. Or in lieu of that, in recent years, biotech companies have been doing big partnership or licensing deals with big pharma. And one of the biggest chilling effects of Sarbanes-Oxley and a lot of the changes that came out of the last bust were keeping smaller, you know, seemingly less sexy biotech issues from getting out in the market and really cutting off the money they need to continue developing their product. I mean, you compare that to the web, where you can have your web product, you know, built on, you know, a couple thousand bucks, put it out and see how it does and know if you have something at least. So at least it makes it easier. But with biotech, you got to go through all that investment to know. So, you know, in the wake of the last dot-com bust, everyone got very excited about biotech, and we never quite saw the surge of, you know, the next Genentech, the next Amgen. And it's partially because of that problem and the chill on the market. So, you know, again, I mean, it's hugely important things. I think we can all agree that, you know, a drug to fight cancer is more important than Facebook, as much as, you know, I love Facebook. But there really is a capitalization problem there that, you know, has to get worked out at some point if we're going to keep seeing innovation.
This prompts me to go to a couple of emails. This is from John, who says, it seems to me that the Silicon Valley synergy of higher education, innovation, a professional work base, and educated immigrants, and increasing productivity is continuing to fulfill Robert Shapiro's model for for continued American success. But I'm curious as to how the emergence of solar, other green, and skin cell and DNA industries came about in our area. Was it the individual innovators or a collective effort to determine what could drive the future of Silicon Valley? Give us some perspective. It's a little historical question, but Carl Guardino, I thought it might be interesting to opine on that.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating is, why do waves of innovation continue to happen here? And I think it's a culture of innovation and a mixture of world-class universities, venture capital funding, and entrepreneurs, and a talent pool. Even now, as we talk about the challenges perhaps in terms of job layoffs, I meet very few CEOs who don't tell me that they are hiring now and here because of the need for talent always in Silicon Valley. So why do waves happen here like clean and green tech? We have those dynamic ingredients that play well here for innovation. And I think we're going to continue to see that. In the past, 12 months, $2.6 billion invested in clean and green tech, 40% here in Silicon Valley in California.
It's not only, a culture of innovation, time, like you're saying, but also a culture that's very wedded to, for example, environmental innovation, particularly in things.
Oh, gosh, yes. In California and Silicon Valley, we know that green is gold. When the Global Warming Solutions Act was passed and signed by Governor Schwarzenegger 2 years ago this month, there were some business groups, not the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, we endorsed it early on, but there were some who were saying, you know, that was going to cause the demise of California's economy. The recent economic impact report that the California Air Resources Board just put out shows that it's going to lead against the baseline of not having passed the Global Warming Solutions Act to 100,000 more jobs in California in clean and green tech, $14 billion in personal income, and $27 billion economic stimulus for our state. So this is the way that Silicon Valley reacts. We see a problem, we help solve it rather than whine about it, and it helps grow our economy.
Carl Guardino, again, is president and CEO of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group. Another email from Brandon, David Sifri, who asks, what about demand contraction as consumers pull back on spending? How will that affect consumer tech companies, though, like Apple or even HP?
I think Brandon makes a terrific point. And certainly in the short term, it's going to be a hit. I think that the reason why we're seeing, aside from all of the institutional money pulling their money out of the stock market right now, but why we're seeing hits in some of these consumer companies like Apple, which in my opinion actually still has a very strong business, is because Wall Street's really focused on the next quarter. They're not focused on what's going to be happening 3 years from now, what's going to be happening 5 years from now. And so to a certain extent, these public companies are kind of going to get bitten because of that what have you done for me lately attitude that Wall Street tends to have. But the guys who still have lots of cash on their balance sheets, the ones who can ride out this recession without having to go back to the capital markets, I think they're going to ride this one out pretty well and be able to hopefully invest further. And then when the market reopens and people start feeling a little bit more comfortable in with their pocketbook, and let's not forget, no matter who you vote for, there's going to be a change in administration come next year we'll certainly see some changes as well on the political side that hopefully will help to build some more consumer confidence.
And we'll bring some more of our callers aboard here. Steve, morning.
Good morning. I got two things here. I just like to comment about some of the best companies, I think, come out of lean times. That's how you prove your business model in the toughest conditions. And also, if people would comment about the trend towards open source software as the backbone of the internet and its potential move into enterprise software space.
Thank well, what's the prognosticating about open source software, Sarah Lacey?
I'll procrastinate about anything. You know that. The thing with open source software and software as a service, which is, companies like Salesforce.com and NetSuite, it's undeniably a huge trend that customers and businesses love because it makes them more flexible and saves them money. And I think that only becomes more attractive in a market like this. I think big companies and enterprises who've been a little bit worried about maybe some of the security or reliability associated with software as a service or open source or even cloud computing are much more likely to try it out. The bad news when you're talking about an economic impact is these companies don't make as much money. By and large, old enterprise software, on-premise software, has to be installed. You can't rip it out. It's a huge upfront payment. Those are not surprisingly the best businesses. So, you know, while you have seen a couple players build big businesses in Red Hat or Salesforce.com, there have been hundreds and thousands of startups funded to take advantage of this trend towards cheaper, more flexible business software. And the customers love it. And a lot of these companies have gotten to $20 million in revenue or so, but they haven't become the next Silicon Valley billion-dollar companies. Because really, much like the Internet has done to the music industry, the Internet has really disrupted and disintermediated that old enterprise software cash cow. So it's one of those things that's great for companies, not so great for the startups themselves or the venture capitalists.
David Siffer, you want to add something here?
Sure. I mean, well, as founder of LinuxCare, which was actually the largest Linux services company in the world through the last bust, you know, we made a lot of money and did a lot of business based around services. And that's really the way that you make money. You make money because of open source software. You don't make money with open source software, right? You don't make it on the selling the software. And what is actually very exciting for me is not, oh, let's go out and sell open source software. What is exciting for me is to watch the engineering minds of Silicon Valley that have been building and helping to tune and create this open source software that's out there. And now you've got companies that are able to take advantage of this. I mean, at Offbeat Guides, where we build personalized travel guides, we use open source software extensively throughout our infrastructure. And we don't even need to then – we use cloud computing like Amazon EC2 and S3 so that for us, we never had to buy a colo. We never had to put computers into a data center and hire 24/7 operations staff, which, by the way, we had to do even back with in Technorati time to be able to actually build a software service company just 5 years ago. So I think what's extraordinary here is the barriers to entry, the amount of cost that you need to be able to create a potentially world-changing software business have gone way, way down. Now, this may actually hurt venture capitalists to a certain extent because they want to put more money to work. They want to get more machines in those colo centers. They want to be able to create or help to fund companies that need the capital to put to work. But what it gets exciting for me is, and I think we'll see a lot of these very, very capital efficient companies that are using open source software at their core, that are using cloud computing infrastructures to be able to expand and contract as demand it grows and shrinks dynamically without having to have all of the cost of building their own data center. This is going to result in a lot of really great margins for these companies and profits.
And we'll go to more of your calls. And Elise, thanks for waiting. You're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is for the small investor. I'm wondering how one would go about, if it's even possible for one to go about investing in some kind of a broad portfolio of these venture investments in green technology.
Jan Yadigarglu, excuse me.
Well, that's not a topic I'm used to thinking about. And so I may not have a good answer.
It's kind of in your portfolio, though, isn't it?
Yes, although we're a private investment firm that's not open to retail investors. So,
which is probably why we can get maybe even more sage advice for the caller from you. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, certainly there are companies that are public that play in these clean technology sectors, and there are even indices of those kinds of companies that are widely available, publicly traded. But I think largely, unfortunately, the venture capital industry is closed to retail investors. There are no sort of easy, direct ways to access it.
Sarah Lacey, let's get you to weigh in.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, there's really no way for retail investors to invest in the real emerging companies unless you're friends with someone who's doing one and you want to put in some friends and family money. But, I think you got to be careful with looking at this. I mean, it has to be your kind of speculative dollars, not just because a lot of these markets and these companies are unproven, but just look at what's happened to the solar stocks over the last year. It's something we cover a lot on TechTicker because we have a very investor-focused audience who is obsessed with solar. And they get whipsawed around no matter, with what oil prices are doing, with the headline of the day, with something about, subsidies in different countries. I mean, it is a very, very volatile market. So, and volatility, you know, obviously is an opportunity to make money. So I'm not saying it's not a good place to invest, but, you know, it should be a small percentage of someone's portfolio, particularly in a time like this.
And I thank Alice for her call. And Ben, let's get you on. Thanks for waiting. Good morning, Ben.
Hi, thanks very much. I just wanted to point out that I find it sort of ironic to hear a sort of element of gloating from the IT industry about the collapse of the financial services industry when a lot of the critique of the of this bubble is the same sort of critique you were hearing of the IT industry's bubble earlier in the decade, that it was sucking away talent from other productive sectors of the economy to create things that weren't really socially useful at the time. And it seems to me like, you know, this is just the people who went through the last bubble critiquing the people who are the victims of the bubble now.
Carl Guardino, have some thoughts about
that? Thank you, Michael. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. I think Ben raises a good point, and it's a reminder. Instead of pointing fingers at other people's misfortune, we have to realize that, you know, when a big animal falls, that tail whips around hard and can hurt everyone else in its path, and that's true with the financial industry. So what are we going to do about it? One, we're not going to gloat that someone else is going through pain, because what hit Wall Street is hitting Main Street and every street in Silicon Valley. We're seeing that. We have to be able to respond with innovation and creativity and making sure we have strong cash reserves while not being so frozen in fear that we can't react. But two other things, Michael, that I think are of interest. As you know, I'm one of 11 members of the California Transportation Commission, and there is being much written about can government finance bonds right now. And some positive news on that front, we have a major construction project going on I-80 over the Donner Pass. And we were very nervous yesterday whether Caltrans and the California Transportation Commission could move those bonds for a major infrastructure project that puts people to work, helps other people get to work and where they're traveling. And we were surprised at how quickly that bond issuance went and the low rate of interest that bond was taken. The second is here more locally. I'm helping to run a campaign to bring BART to Santa Clara County, Measure B, on this November's ballot. And you always wonder, in a tough economy, do people want to invest? Yet the feedback we continue to get is people get it. When you build infrastructure, especially transportation infrastructure, things like BART, that people realize, hey, we need that. We need it long term. And that's going to create jobs to build it. And it's going to help the rest of us get to our jobs. In fact, Wilbur Smith, an associate.
We're going to have to conclude on that, Carl. I'm sorry to say we're out of time here. But thank you, Carl Guardino, David Sifri, Sarah Lacey, and Jan Yadigaraglu. And thank you, listeners. We'll be back for another hour. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.